Rebel Force Radio presents...
Excuse me, sir. Might I inquire what's going on?
This is RFR Q&A.
Hey, Star Wars fans. Jimmy Mack here with you, and welcome back to another edition of RFR Q&A. The Q&A is rocking each and every week with a new RFR VIP sitting at the microphone. And this time around, we have RFR VIP Frank. Frank, how's it going, man?
It is so good to be back with you, Jimmy Mack. It's a pleasure and an honor always to be on the Q&A.
Right. Now, you've been on the Q&A before, but it's been a while.
It's been about 2 years, I think, since the last one.
Oh, my God.
But we saw each other in Bristol.
That's right.
We got to say hi. So that was lovely. But in the past we've done we've talked about I was 10 when the Phantom Menace came out, and you were about to have your first kid. So we talked about those perspectives, and we talked about the Beatles once. Right. You came on my podcast, and we talked about Superman. So we've had a couple of good chats.
Yeah, and it was good to see you out at May the 4th be with you out at Bristol.
That was so great. That was such a blast.
And you're local to that area, or
I'm in New Hampshire, so I'm a couple states away, but close enough that I was able to convince my wife that hey, I'm gonna drive down to Connecticut for a night, and are you good with the 2-year-old?
Yeah.
For a night? Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. All right. I'll see you.
Road trip.
Yeah. Met up with a buddy who lives in New York. We made a weekend of it. It was great.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys put on a great show, and it was great to get to hang out with other RFR listeners all in one place. And, you know, I mean, it's been said to death, I guess, already, but it's just you guys put on a great show, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, thanks, man. Thanks. Maybe we could do something like that again next year. I don't know if Bristol would be the place.
But sure. But hey, whoever wants to invite to host RFR for May the 4th show, why not? You know,
right.
My backyard is available, I hear, so we could always. I got a fire pit.
Don't joke around about things like this, okay? Because I'll take you up on it, and not only would I take you up on it, I'd return year after year. It's really crazy. It's like I'm a perennial, you know?
Our annual visit with Jimmy Mack is coming up. So, he's bringing Jason. Yeah, he is. Yep.
That guy again? This has been, the fourth year in a row now. Our 2-year-old is 6.
Don't embarrass me in front of the guys.
What's been up with your Star Wars fandom? Where are you at?
Oh, man. Where am I at? I am really looking forward to I'm blanking on the name right now, the Jude Law show, the Skeleton Crew.
Yeah.
Super looking forward to Skeleton Crew so much that I can't remember the name. The Acolyte wasn't everything I wanted it to be. Again, that's been said to death. But where I am, I've been doing a lot of thinking about not just Star Wars fandom, but in particular, I've been thinking about like being a fan of RFR and how many, like, you know, like I just said, like so many great people that this show has brought together, and, you know, got to hang out with so many of them in Connecticut. And obviously there's been, you know, you guys have done all things at Celebration and all these other great things over the years. And I was thinking back about, you know, you guys have had so many great bits and recurring jokes and all these things over the years. I've been listening since the ForceCast days. When I was in college when I discovered the ForceCast, and I've listened to the show on my commutes, and so that's like how I, you know, first sort of remember, you know, for every Friday was like, cool, there's a new ForceCast, I'm going to listen to Jason and Jimmy, and even in the Pete days, like, but you guys have had so many consistent bits. I went on Facebook and I asked the official RFR community what their favorite memories and jokes and bits from over the years were.
Interesting.
And Jimmy Mac, this is your life.
he's got a presentation here now.
I thought it'd be fun to sort of look through some of these old listen to some of these old bits and things and see what you remember and see, you know, just sort of reminisce and laugh about them. And folks, if you know, people listening, I'm a lot of these. I mean, people voted for these in the poll in the Facebook group. So I know these are going to resonate with the RFR loyal fan base here on Patreon.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious to hear what you got. You know, you do these things week after week after week. Sometimes things fall through the cracks as far as memories go.
Sure.
And so somebody just recently brought something up to me asking me, what episode did this happen? And I'm like, oh my God, I have no recollection of that at all. And
Tyler.
Yeah. Well, Tyler, he remembers a lot of stuff too, but I can't rely on Tyler for everything. So
the guy's got his own life going on.
Yeah,
know.
Right. Right. I can't ask him to keep track of my craziness when he's got his own struggles, you know. But sure. I'm trying to find what was the question they asked me about. It was so recently. Oh, here it is. Some impressions or a show where Jason or I were doing an impression of Palpatine, and Palpatine was an orchestra leader, and that's all I got here. Palps,
I do not remember that one. I got to say,
yeah, I don't remember that one either. So I said, hey, why don't you throw it out to other Patreon members? Maybe they can
exactly.
Tell you. So if anybody remembers, because sometimes things just happen fast and furiously and there's no preparation that goes into it. It just sort of happens and then it goes.
Absolutely. I mean, and you see, you know, you say something, you know, you're speaking extemporaneously and you say stuff. It might even be like you have a great laugh about it, whatever. You don't remember it like the next day.
Sometimes. Yeah, I wish I could.
You put a show out there and then it's out there and it's kind of that's in your past now.
But if somebody does know about this bit about Palpatine being an orchestra leader, show at rebelforceradio.com. Let me know. Yeah. I'm curious myself. I want to hear it.
I don't remember that one myself. I did go deep into the archives for this. I did. I pulled some. I used ChatGPT and had it look at the RSS feed and find the description of the episode where it says this, yada yada, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So we got some help from AI to pull some of these clips. But wow. I know you have great. Actually, I'm curious about this. I feel like you are often able to pull up. Somebody will mention something that happened, 5-10 years ago, and you're able to pull up the audio like that. Is that because you're doing it in post, or do you really have these things at your fingertips where you're like, oh yeah, that time that I told Dylan that we were a G-level family or whatever, like stuff like that? Are you just pulling it up on the fly, or are you putting that in post later? I'm always impressed by how quickly
it gets pulled up on the fly. Really? Yeah, just keyword searches.
Nice.
And we've kept folder upon folder upon folder of audio from over the years.
Sure.
So
you must have quite the quite the archive and the way that the stuff is all set up to be able to find it. That's very impressive.
I've never thrown anything away.
Yeah. Nor should you.
This comes from way back when I was before I even started podcasting, and I was working in radio, and we were dealing with all of these audio elements, and it was so easy to get rid of them from time to time, especially in the analog days, where if you needed tape, you would just record over whatever you had before. But I was really inspired by Ben Burtt and George Lucas in the way that they just save things, even the stuff they didn't use, because then down the road, they would find a use for it. So I started saving stuff audio-wise in every format you could possibly believe years and years ago. So I have a lot of DAT tapes, digital audio tape.
That's going back, yes.
I have too much of that stuff. And it's not the most compatible medium as far as audio goes. It's a struggle to find a DAT player these days.
I would think.
I'm still digitizing them. I have a DAT player right there.
Right on.
But that one, it ate a tape. And ever since it did that, I've been afraid to use it because,
sure.
You know, I'm trying to archive this stuff and, and not destroy it. But I have so much physical media in my house. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Reel-to-reel tape.
Right. You had that that tape a few months ago from the 77 press tour.
I didn't return that either. I still have it. Yeah.
Oops.
You
digitized that. So, okay, you got that. You got reel-to-reel. Look, you can even see. Flying around?
I'll even show you. If I can, my reel-to-reel deck is... Shoot, my camera. Oh, look at this. My camera is moving. Okay. Ooh. You can see the reel-to-reel decks right there. Puffer Pig is on it. Hold on.
I see it. I see the VU meters above it. Yeah.
It's kind of dark in here. There we go.
There you go.
And you see Puffer Pig?
I do.
Mm-hmm. And then
the full console. We're not just talking a player. That is the real deal. It's almost like you worked in radio or something.
Yeah. Oh, I've hunched over these things for hours and hours and hours in the, especially, you know, 80s and 90s.
Sure.
And then I got my Star Wars books next to it and a bunch of like Star Wars, like awards.
I see that. Awards, certificates, autographs.
I have Star Wars awards, but just, you know, 501st this and. Sure. Rebel Legion, that, whatever, you know.
Sure, sure. Wolfpack, all that.
Wolfpack is up there.
Yeah.
And the script pages from the Smugglers audio dramas we produced and signed by the cast. So it's just nice to have.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. love to see those. I haven't listened to those in quite some time, actually. I need to go back and
me neither.
And listen to those. Yeah.
I want to give them a solid re-release here on Patreon.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even the third one, we never really went back and enhanced. So
yeah, right. You were adding sound effects and stuff on the first two, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. I might do that just on my own
and
without our director hovering over me. Having me change everything.
That's always how they are, these Hollywood types, you know?
The worst. But, you know, I was proud of the way those all turned out. So
they were fantastic.
To revisit those, yeah. Well, thank you, man. So let's get into this presentation you have here.
Let's jump into it.
Is there a title for this? What are we calling this?
RFR Rewind already is a thing. RFR Retro. This is your life. This is your life is how we're going. Let's go with that.
RFR, I don't like this is your life. I'm thinking, I like where you were going with the RFR retro rewind. You said there's a rewind, but there's not RFR retro rewind.
True. Yeah. it's all about the nostalgia. This is all about the nostalgia. So most of these are things that I think you will remember. They're not a lot of like one-offs, like a thing you did or said once, you know, it's a lot of them are like recurring things or things that have been joked about since that they kept them in the old noggin here. But
okay.
let's start off here and I'm going to do my level best to give it a Jimmy Mac sort of setup, like a Star Wars and pop culture style setup.
Ooh,
so we've got we're talking about the EU and we've got you and Jason and Kyle and Paul Bateman. You guys are talking about the old school, the EU. I think this is from the Forcecast days.
Okay.
And
just like, I never even saw what it looked like, but it's burned in my head just from the way it looked off the page. It was like Mount Yoda, like approaching that in X-Wing, what that would look like and seeing that if we could get Anakin going.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Clone Wars delivers, but not in the kind of like...
That Paul Awesome, I feel like, was one of my favorite, a low key, so low key. This is an April Fool's thing you guys did, where you guys were talking about your quote unquote favorite moments from the EU, but it was just the most ridiculous. It's a very fun conversation. If anyone wants to go back and dig it in the archives, it's very fun. But that was Paul's awesome. Is something that like lives rent free in my head.
That was sort of a meme in itself for a little while. I remember
that. Yeah. So that one's okay. That's just a little, we're sort of, that's a getting a taste for things, but I've always appreciated your dedication to getting to the bottom of things. You know, you'll have some kind of Star Wars mystery and you are right there, you know, front and center. Like I gotta find out what happened here.
Yes.
And
so who's to say, but one thing we thought is that this might call for an investigative report.
Thank you, Jason. I am Jimmy Mack from the Rebel Force Radio Investigative Report team.
Gets me every time. The team, the A Current Affair theme. I think the first time I heard that, I fell out of my chair. Just couldn't, like, just what a throwback. And then the team. Just yeah. I wait with anticipation. Heavy with anticipation every time.
Yeah, we've looked deep into such controversial topics like who's BJ Hughes?
Of course.
I'm thinking about there's been so many controversies over the years and things that we've had to dig deep into that
I remember keep
track
one
of them all.
I remember one. I think this might have been the one I pulled it from. Jason had a friend who had a false memory of seeing Return of the Jedi and Palpatine making fun of the way Yoda talks.
Oh.
Like, still talk backwards, does he? Or something like that. And his friend was positive that he saw that in the theaters. And you went into the archives and figured out, you know, where did he get that false memory from?
Where did that come from?
I don't remember, to be honest with you, but that was definitely an odd one. It reminds me of like the Biggs scene from A New Hope, right?
Yeah.
The people swear on the Bible that they saw that in theaters, but it never happened.
Never happened. Theatrically released.
Nope.
Most people feel that way because their memories provide them with recollection of a trading card image or the Marvel Comics adaptation or... Yes. Or most famously, there was a book, the Star Wars Storybook, which had stills of those deleted scenes.
Yes.
And that was, you know, that had kids of that era buzzing about it. Wait a second. What are these photos of? These weren't in the film.
So right.
Then you'd have some kid who would say, well, I saw them in the movie. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing those. You did. And then it just catches on. And
right.
One thing leads to another. We did have Steve Sansweet on to ask him a question about those big scenes. And he confirms 1,000% that they were never theatrically released.
I feel like I do remember that conversation. Yeah. I mean, there's just, it'd be cool if it had happened, right? It'd be cool if some cuts got out there somehow, but it just...
Yeah, I had a friend of mine who was insisting he saw them.
Really?
And it was in the same cut. There was a cantina alien who drank his cocktails by pouring them into a hole in his head.
Oh, I remember you mentioning this. Yeah.
And I said, well, wait a second. You're mixing up all of these memories because that is Harvey Korman's character from the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Holiday Special, does that. Yes. Yes.
So, you know, all of these things were messing with kids of the 70s.
Sure.
And
and especially, they came out, a year apart, year and a half apart, and you saw it only once.
Yes.
When it aired, right? So, like, those memories start to swirl around in there.
Right. Then the 80s roll around, you're in high school, and all of these other kids are telling you these things that you know is false, but there's no internet back then to help you prove your point. So... People just became accepted as fact after a while.
Exactly.
And then the internet came around in the 90s and blew all that out of the water.
Yeah, yeah. But not before everyone fought about it on the internet. Had a big, no, I definitely saw it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then you come along and you set the record straight. You know, and that's what you're here to do.
Is debunk.
Set the record straight. Debunking.
All right, so investigative reports.
Yes.
People like those.
People love them.
Yeah.
People love them. That got a lot of votes. Another thing that got a lot of votes in the poll in the Facebook group was a frequent a frequent caller you guys used to get.
Hi, Jason. Hi, Jimmy. This is Bob Iger, the Iger Sanction, calling with greetings to you in the RFR community. I'm most grateful for the two of you. I've got my Swanson Hungry Man turkey dinner defrosting in the fridge. I'm hoping that Hayden Christensen could come over and float some of the bits before me. He's so dreamy.
Those were gold, every single one of them. Loved. I'm trying to remember who it was. Or I mean, obviously it was Bob, but I can't remember who it was who was always doing those. But that was,
I have no idea. For all I know, that is Bob Iger.
All right, it was Bob. Well, yeah. Bob, if you're listening, some of your best work.
Call really, back for you. Crying out loud.
Yeah,
call us.
Yeah,
back.
It's been, come on. You never call anymore.
No, after come he on, retired. That was it, and then he's back, and he doesn't call us anymore. So
you know, come on. I mean, you know, I guess you know. Once Chapek didn't call, he felt like he couldn't. I don't know.
I have no idea.
It's real sad. It's real sad. Bob was always a great caller, but Bob's not the only repeat caller that you've had.
Oh, I mean, I don't think. Sorry, man.
What? That's your ringtone?
Yeah.
Is the late Carrie Fisher thing baboon-ass?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
You hear it?
All right. Yeah, I hear it. I know who that is.
Well, you know, we made that ringtone available to the RFR Patreon community. I'm going to take this. Hold on one second.
All right. Yeah, I think I know who
Hello?
That is.
Nat! It's been a while since I've heard from you. No, I did notice.
Always a classic when you hear from Nat. Always.
Maybe it is. She's, for you. It's terrifying for me.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm sitting in a much more more comfortable seat. But yeah, that's I'm sure every time that's got to be harrowing when that you hear the baboon ass and it's just oh no, here it is.
She's very, very threatening on those phone calls. Yeah, yeah. And I'm telling you what, she's got the muscle to back it up too. You don't want to mess with her. But somehow I find myself in these precarious situations concerning Nat, and she always has to interrupt the show and basically just chew me out. And it's you know, I talked to a therapist about this actually, and they said, hey, you know, just don't let it affect you. Just let it bounce off you. But I said, hey, but yeah. You got to understand. I'm a Star Wars podcaster, and this is Natalie Portman calling me.
Exactly.
It goes deeper than just, you know, just brush it off and move on with your day. But well, if you guys could hear, and she's also, you know, the language, the foul language, it's...
Oh, I can only imagine.
So, well,
it's... You know, it's a family show. You don't want that. You don't want to expose Kid Blake to that stuff.
Well, unfortunately, it's too late for him. He's already going to be very corrupted, and you know, that'll all come to the surface soon enough.
Well, at least he got some cool headphones out of the deal, I guess. That's, you know,
that's right. He got some.
There's that.
Yeah, some good Mandalorian headphones.
Yeah, that and the bragging rights that he beats FJ. Yeah. Well, let's move on to something a little bit lighter, huh?
Okay.
I don't want to keep you in the Nat zone. You know, let's, why don't we, you know, we've got plenty to celebrate. You guys always.
Oh, yes. August 23rd through my birthday at the Orange County
his
Convention
birthday.
Center
his birthday.
In Orlando.
Always,
Star
always.
Wars Celebration 6 on its way.
C6 back in the day.
C6. That was
those No Fan Left Behind. Those got me through. I've never had the pleasure of going to Celebration. I got real, real close for C5. Maybe it was even C6. I don't know. One of the ones in Anaheim. But never quite made it. And the No Fan Left Behind coverage always carried me through and you know, made me feel like I was as close to being there as I could.
Yeah. I mean, we went there with the idea of gathering up as much audio content and audio entertainment that we could possibly do. And that's hard to do with all the distractions going on sometimes. You get pulled off into different areas and you forget why you're there.
So, sure.
So you might have that recorder.
Right. Yeah.
But also it was nice because those were the places we were all able to meet each other for the first time. And I have a lot of fond memories about that and just not sleeping and just really, you know, having good chemistry with all those guys and doing Star Wars stuff. It's all evolved a little bit, but it's still mainly the same core feeling I get when we all hang out together. So, because just like a lot of people listening, I don't have scores upon scores of hardcore Star Wars fans in my day-to-day life. That's why I do this, and that's why people listen, is because they want that connection with other fans who can communicate about Star Wars on a higher level than just the casual viewer can. People who have incorporated it into their lifestyles and have so for decades.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the type of Star Wars fans I want to hang out with.
Hell yeah, brother.
And going to Star Wars Celebration, that was the first time I was really exposed to a large group of people who are really as passionate about Star Wars as I am, who could speak the language, who know the players, who understand the background of it all and the history, and who have experiences that other fans can relate to. So the world became a much smaller place once I started discovering other Star Wars fans via conventions. Yeah. That was my real foot in the door, was the conventions.
Yes.
And it was because of Star Wars Celebration 4 in 2007 when I wanted to get hooked up with the fan community. There were always things like websites. Social media wasn't really around. But the websites and the artistry was all there. But I didn't find my niche where I could be creative with Star Wars. When podcasting took off, even before podcasting took off, when podcasting showed up, I looked at it and said, now this is my avenue. I can make waves if I just get behind a Star Wars audio production. It was always my dream just to work with all the audio.
Mm-hmm.
All the sounds and the music and everything. So podcasting instantly gave me that avenue. And then, I mean, combined with my radio background, it just seemed like a match made in heaven. So, I just went for it. And because I wanted to know people at Star Wars Celebration 4, I thought it would be cool if I'm on the convention floor and I see the booth for the Force.net or Rebel Scum or whatever, I could roll up on that booth and say, hey, I'm Jimmy Mack. And I'm like, oh, hey, man, nice to meet you. Good. You know, I thought that would be just like the ultimate.
Sure.
And then, falling in with Swank and that gang from the Force cast, that was already in place by the time I showed up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was Star Wars Celebration in L.A. Celebration 4, and that's when I first met Swank, and Billy was there. That was the first time I met Steve Sansweet.
Oh, okay.
Who else? Pete Nadel, of course.
Of course.
There was a crew from back in the day, and Kyle. That was the first time I met Kyle Newman.
Yep. Back in those days, was it like Curdo and Jay Shepard and like that whole crew of Rebel Scum official picks,
all those guys, Dustin Roberts, so it was kind of fun to get to meet these guys, and they all were on the inside, it seemed, you know, because those websites were affiliated with Official Picks. Official Picks was running the autograph hall. So that gave us opportunities to hang out with the celebrities.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal.
That's the kind of thing that you can't, money can't buy, that kind of serendipity.
I was thrilled with the way it all worked out. Yeah. I really was. And The best part of it all, though, was getting together. I just remember this one time. It was me, Swank, and Billy. And we were standing at this, by these doors in the convention center. And we just started riffing on something really funny. I can't even remember what it was.
Sure.
But Swank was laughing so hard. He was like crying, you know, he's like wiping his eyes and stuff. And me and Billy were just being, you know, unrelenting the way we were just hitting this guy with comedy. And it just seemed like, wow, this is good energy. This is good chemistry.
Yeah.
Because me and Jason, I think he was kind of standoffish toward me at first. Thinking I would come in and take over and all this stuff. But
sure. I really, sure. Chicago radio really, big shot, gonna take over.
But I mean, it was just like, I liked what I was hearing them do. And I was a fan of that. So I didn't want to shake things up or rock the boat or anything. I just wanted to polish it, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So that happened, and then Pete quit. So,
right. I remember when Pete announced he was leaving, I was like, what's going to happen to the show?
Yeah. And we made no announcements.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Pete left.
Just.
And the show was back the next week. And there I was.
There you were. The first time I remember hearing you, I feel like you were doing some like segments, like remotes almost for a little bit, right? I remember like Celebration Japan.
Yeah.
I feel like you weren't, maybe this was still when Pete was one of the hosts of the main show, but you were like, you had your Mark Hamill interview, obviously. And, mm-hmm. and that's the first I remember, the first Jimmy Mac I remember.
Yeah. First year and a half, I was more or less like show producer.
Sure.
And doing segments and other things we called microcasts.
I remember those.
I had one I did about music, or I would do interviews, just little things. And I had a stash of Star Wars audio that I had already done for radio. So I was able to slide that in there as well.
Sure.
And yeah, it was fun. It was just learning about podcasting and trying to push the boundaries of what, because I felt like a lot of people who were podcasting in those early days were really complacent. You know, they were just happy to put something out. I was more interested in seeing how far we can go with the production and everything else. And I think that really made the show stand out in the early days. And here we are today, you know. And
the what you guys did on the Forcecast back in those days, that and our mutual friend Steve Glosson's early podcasting, that was the first time I heard podcasts that sounded like radio, or that were trying to sound like radio quality. Up until then, it was a guy recording into his laptop mic, you know, just, and he had the passion for talking about whatever he was talking about, but didn't have the radio know-how, didn't have that level of production. But when I heard what you were doing and what Steve was doing, I was like, oh, this is what this medium is supposed to be. Like, it has arrived.
Yeah. Well, I felt the same way when I heard Steve the first time too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, geez, this guy's got personality to burn. He's just amazing. What energy. What a great guy.
Mm-hmm. That guy can just go all day. He just will just go and go and go. Big personality. Love that guy.
Oh, we do. I mean, my whole family loves him. He's just a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, he is.
Yes. Those early days were a lot of fun. And those Star Wars Celebration meetups were really instrumental in making it all happen. I mean, because I did this thing, I would take the recording gear with me before podcasting even existed. And I would go to those early Star Wars celebrations, Star Wars Celebration 2 in, what was that, 2002.
Yeah.
I went there and I recorded all of these interviews with all the actors and not all of them. Peter Mayhew said no. Mm. And he said, he was like really mean about it too. He's like, no. I was like, okay, right. It was great though, because I eventually got to.
You got pretty
to know him after a while.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, know him just from talking to him.
But you were friendly at a point, yeah.
Yeah. And we would look at like Carrie Fisher's room, and I'd remember Billy Mack would be like, "Ooh, the white whale. There it is, the white whale." But that was a lot of fun, and I really got off on it.
Yeah.
And so by the time I started to become aware of podcasting, more specifically of Jason and Pete,
yep,
then I knew that that could be a good avenue for me. And with the convention coming up, that motivated me then to reach out to the guys. It was at the end of 2006, mm-hmm, like November, December 2006. And they were just getting, you know, their feet under them and starting to build up a little bit of an audience and a little bit of a buzz. And then I showed up at the door just to complicate things further. But I got to be honest with you, those guys, it would have been a 2 or 3 year affair and it would have been over with had I not shown up. I can say that with confidence. Pete got married and...
Yeah.
His new wife didn't want him goofing around with podcasting, and it was purely a hobby.
Sure. Yes. Yeah.
And absolutely. Yeah. And then with Jason, you know, it's he was, you know, a young dad at the time and
right,
going through some transitional things with his career and all of that. By that point, I felt like I had pretty much stabilized as an adult, and I had everything that, you know, in place that I needed to have in place. So a hobby like podcasting, I felt like was really healthy and good for me to do, but also an extension of my career.
Right.
So it's not all just playtime. It's not all just a hobby. It's not all just geeking out about Star Wars.
Yeah.
I believed, and I still believe, you know, we're almost 20 years later now, I believe that this has been really strong for my career, all of my podcasting experience, because I got to know all the technical things about it before radio started to take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time radio did start taking it seriously, I was in a position to say, "Hey, where you guys been?"
Right.
Where you guys been? I would go on job interviews, and podcasting would be in like my special interest part of at the bottom of my resume.
Sure.
And I realized after a couple of times, these guys are really interested in talking to me during the interviews about podcasting. So I moved it to the top of the resume.
There you go.
Yeah. Thankfully, yeah, I didn't have to do too many job interviews. So
yeah, good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, that, what a, it landed at like the right time, and you know, for that just what a like it, I have always wanted, like, I want that intersection of, you know, the thing that I'm passionate about and the thing that I'm really good at to land in such a way that I can bring them together, right? Where, yes, you're even able to have some separation between the work and the play, so that the hobby doesn't turn into the job, which then you start to hate, right? Like there's always that fear of like, but if I make money doing the thing that I love, I won't love it anymore. But you know, managing to have those sort of take separate worlds that sometimes cross over is kind of a nice position.
But you'll still find yourselves at the crossroad every once in a while.
Yeah.
Where you'll be like, what am I doing? I'm on a plane flying to Japan right now. What am I? Am I out of my mind? Sure. What am I doing here? And then I'm on the flight back going, wow, that was so worth it. I'm so glad I did that. So,
of course, yeah.
You know, sometimes when that self-doubt sets in, it's best to just try to find that part in you that's like a very patient person. Let's just see how it plays out. So thankfully I haven't had too many of those soul searching moments when it's come to Star Wars, but my level of commitment was so strong, especially in those early days. I wasn't sure if I was just a dog chasing his tail. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Podcasting has, and I always had faith it would, it has emerged as a legitimate medium.
Yes.
And yes, it's taken a long time to get there, but it's definitely there now. It's there. It's an industry.
Yes.
And so all of those early years, busting our butts for very little in return was, it was worth it after all. You know, in some of the sacrifice, I mean, there were sacrifices that were made. No, I can't do that. I can't go with you on that trip. I have to podcast at night. I mean, things like that, you know, you have to. Yeah, and the time that you spend when you're not behind the mic is, for me, substantial.
Yes, and it shows.
Thank you. Thank you. But, yeah, it just it has to happen, so.
Yeah. It's an amazing sort of, synergy, serendipity, that the way things worked out the way they're supposed to. You know, and the people who came together, because over the last, 20 almost years, like it's there's nothing else like it. There's and you know, to go back to conventions being sort of like the heart of it, like the beautiful thing about, I think, when podcasting is at its best, when social media sometimes is at its best, it's a double-edged sword. But, you know, it can really bring people together. People who like you were just saying, like I've only got one or two friends who I can really get into Star Wars with.
Yeah.
And you know, beyond that, you know, I'm not seeing them every day. We don't live in the same state or anything. Like I don't talk to them every single day, but you know, people that I've met through your shows and through social media and whatnot, like that's the community that's like in my pocket all the time, right? Like I can pull up my phone and start a conversation with folks here on Patreon anytime I want, basically, about whatever I want. And that's, you can't buy that, you know. Mm-hmm. It has to happen organically. It's got to be the right people with the right skills and talent and passion, and all these things have to come together. It's a perfect storm. That's sort of what that's what this whole Retro Rewind is, a celebration.
The RFR Retro Rewind, yes. Celebration.
Yes, yes.
So somebody else has already claimed celebration when it comes to Star Wars.
Yes, right? That's right. That's,
you know, Anthony Daniels told me once, he goes, I despise that name, celebration, for these things. He goes, it's just so corny sounding. And celebration. Wow. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
I should have followed up with the question. Well, what would you have named it?
Right. What would be better?
Maybe I did. I can't remember. It was so long ago, but I do remember him saying this. It's like, you don't like that name, do you? I was like, oh, I never really thought of it. I guess not. If you don't, 3PO. Where does this fall on the whole etiquette and protocol scale here?
Right? Yeah. Well, you know, if he's familiar with 6 million forms of communication, there must be some word better than celebration that he can think of.
Yeah. Expo. Just saying. What are you going to call it?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's a nice name, and I think it has stood the test of time at this point.
Right.
When you consider that we're going into our 26th year of this stuff. Wow.
Right, yeah.
You're not going to Japan, are you?
I'm not.
No.
I'm not, unfortunately, no.
You haven't even been to one in the States. So
I haven't even been to one in the States yet.
Going to Japan would be a real stretch. Well, I hope you get to make it to one of these days.
I'm sure I will. I'm confident I will one of these days. One of these days. But, you know, you've been to so many of them. You know, we mentioned C4. Celebration 5 is one that sticks out in my mind a lot. As I feel like a lot of big things happened at Celebration 5. It had like the main event, right? That was that that big panel with George and John Stewart. We learned where Ben Kenobi's home planet was, Stewjon. We saw that, I think it was C5, where that deleted scene from Return of the Jedi with Luke and his lightsaber. I think that was revealed there.
Yep.
So a lot of big stuff happened at C5. But one of the things that I remember the most about your coverage of C5 was
it was amazing when George walked in.
It was
when George walked into that auditorium, the place went wild. And all I remember is standing up on my chair, pointing at him, going, GL's in the house. GL's in the house. And then that was the last thing anyone heard me say for the rest of the trip.
Well,
I completely shattered my vocal box telling GL's in the house.
Jimmy's Mac's last words. It's like Rosebud. Jimmy Mac's last words, GL in the house.
In the house.
That I felt for you. I mean, losing your voice when you're a broadcaster is rough, especially when you're talking to Princess Leia the next day or whatever. But and I know the audio is out there somewhere of you actually in the audience. I couldn't find it, couldn't pull it up, but that always gets me. That's a sorry to take it to have a laugh at your expense, but it's
that was a rough funny. One. You know, going from the heat into the air conditioning in Orlando over and over again and not sleeping.
Yeah.
Possibly some acid reflux situations and a lot of yelling and screaming at inappropriate times.
Sure.
So the last day of that show. Total laryngitis.
Yeah.
And it's the same day we're gonna sit down with Mark Flippin' Hamill.
Right.
So I have to whisper to Mark throughout that interview.
That's right. It was Mark Hamill, not Carrie Fisher. Yeah.
And man, did that suck. That sucked so much. And I learned a lot about myself. I mean, I was pretty young back then still and able to push myself to certain limits.
Sure.
And past certain limits. I live much more healthier lifestyle, I think, now.
Good for you. Good for
but,
you.
And I've never experienced laryngitis like that since. But it was brutal, man. It was brutal. And but I was just in good company because people like James Arnold Taylor was there and he was spraying stuff into my throat and trying to remedy the situation for me.
He would know how to fix it, right? That's his livelihood too.
Exactly. So it was kind of fun, but it was frustrating. It was, and when I yelled GL at the house to him, he looked at me and gave me the number one, like number one,
Star Wars number one.
Yeah, he stuck a finger up. I don't know if it was the index finger. It was, or maybe it wasn't number one. Maybe he was expressing an entirely different message to me
with
an entirely different finger. But that was a good show altogether. We podcasted from the Official Picks Autograph Hall. And that was cool because then celebrities would come over and pop by the show. Anthony Daniels came over and told us to turn it down.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
Filoni stopped by. I got the Wolfpack tattoo on my shoulder during a broadcast there.
Yes.
We were hanging out with Andy Hurley from Fall Out Boy all weekend.
Oh, I remember
That's how
that.
We got to know him.
Right.
He's a great guy from Milwaukee. And Smugglers. There was the second Smugglers. And it was all in all just a great time at that one.
Yeah.
Outside of me losing my voice.
Apart from that. Hey, you know, the one thing about that Mark Hamill interview, if nothing else, you got to follow up with him. I remember, again, I mentioned that I listened to your interview with him in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And I got very excited when he told his George Harrison story.
Yes.
And then he left you with this cliffhanger of, next time we talk, ask me about my Ringo story.
Yeah.
And I was like, who knows if he'll get this chance to talk to him again? Like maybe we'll never get to hear this story. But the first thing you said to him once you mustered up the voice to do so was
whispered
to Ringo story.
Yeah.
And you got it. You got the Ringo story. So like you got that that closure, right?
Yeah.
4 or 5 years later, whatever it was. So at least there was something that I was very grateful for in the moment because like yes. Your priorities are in order. That is where you start. Start with the Beatles story.
Exactly. Yeah. And then be quiet for the rest of the interview. And let Swank ask all the questions.
But you know what? You may not have much, but you have it where it counts.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of harrowing sometimes doing interviews in those convention centers. And for the longest time, I looked at it as a real opportunity to get in there and talk to people. And then after I did about 100 of them, I just came to the conclusion that I'm just not getting the in-depth conversations I want talking to these people in the convention center. And so, man, I think we talked to Dennis Lawson, Wedge. That was probably the last one we've done in a convention center. And that was back in 2017.
Wow, has it been that long since you've been going to a convention? Okay. Wow.
I really can't recall doing any since then. But when, instead of carrying on with the conversation in the convention center now, I just try to lay the groundwork for a call in on the show, because those interviews are always just 1,000 times better.
Their guard is down. They've got more time, presumably.
They're not on the clock.
So, when they're at those shows, I mean, like, they're being swarmed by fans. Their guard is up. They don't want to say the wrong thing. They don't want, like, they're tired, you know, everything else. But when you've got them, just them, got an hour or so with them or whatever, like, that's a way.
In a controlled environment. So I've really sort of outgrown the whole idea of doing those interviews at those convention centers. But I mean, if push came to shove, and it was somebody I really wanted to talk to, I'd do it in a second.
Sure, of course,
don't prioritize that kind of thing anymore. I just haven't for a long time.
Now, I get the sense that very often you guys, I've done these interviews too, where, like, okay, you know, so-and-so has 30 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it is. So you try to be as respectful of their time as you can. And if you're lucky, you know, they'll stick around for longer. I get the sense that that often you guys end up, they're generous enough with their time that you're whatever the promised, you know, length of time was, you guys end up going past it. Am I right in thinking that that's the sense that I get?
Well, the first thing to do is try to go into the interview without any boundaries being established whatsoever.
No conversations
about length of interview or subject matter or anything. Just that's the best way to approach an interview, per my experience. Is just, you know, nothing, you know, don't even tell them that, this will be edited and blah, 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 nothing.
Sure.
Just hit them with the questions in the conversation and know some. Sometimes, and in very rare situations, we've gone into an interview and I say, well, you know, we want to ask them these Yoda questions from the Yoda questionnaire. Usually I never prep anybody who's going to get asked those questions. But there have been a couple of them where I did let them know, hey, we're going to ask you these. And just so I would get a solid answer, you know, sometimes I can just tell that if we hit them with these questions cold, it's not going to be entertaining. But if they have a day or two to think about it, we'll get some good stuff. But that rarely has happened. I'm trying to think of who it was that I was the last person I gave those questions to. But I can't remember.
It must have been a while ago, because I feel like very often I can hear the trepidation in their voice when you start to introduce the idea. They're like, oh, no, am I going to get, like,
They don't know what's going.
And I'm listening. I'm like, it's fine. You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. Literally. It's just
Well, I find to tell them, you know, give them a heads up. Hey, this isn't trivia. There's no right or wrong. But then Jason says, but some answers might be more right than others. That's a great way to put it.
It really is.
Best, in my opinion, not to prep, you know, anybody for an interview.
That's good advice. It really is. If you don't have those guardrails up, then you can kind of go wherever you want with it. And explore.
Keep it real.
Keep it real. Exactly. You guys have kept it very real in the Cantina over the years. Lots of great in-depth. I mean, I'm thinking about even just recent ones like, you know, Diana Leah Inosanto was a great one. Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah.
Todd Fisher was awesome.
Todd, that's the one I enjoyed the most was Todd. Man. I enjoyed prepping for that. I listened to his audiobook. I just was really into it. So by the time he got on the line with us, just prior to that interview, I had finished his audiobook. Like when I was pulling into my driveway. And then we did the interview with him a couple hours later. So it was just so fresh on my mind that I really, really enjoyed that one. Yeah.
I had no, you know, and I'm a fan of old Hollywood stuff and, you know, and so I knew that Debbie Reynolds was something of a collector, but I didn't realize that it was like Indiana Jones, like just miles and miles of shelves. Like I did not realize it went to that extent.
A warehouse worth. Yeah. And they've had so many false starts and stops with the museum when she was alive. Just the fact that it all just never happened before she died is a shame. But it seems like Todd is trying to carry on with her legacy well as he can. But, you know, in many ways, that big collection of stuff was also something of a burden to Debbie, no matter how much she loved it. It was just a lot of stuff.
It's just stuff, right? Like when you collect stuff, it's just, you gotta keep it somewhere. You got to preserve it, right? Yeah, like these things are not going to, you can't just put them in a muggy, humid warehouse or whatever. It's got to be climate controlled, all this stuff.
A lot of that Hollywood stuff, it wasn't built to last.
Right. Yeah. When we're talking about sets and stuff like that, like, isn't that, it was ephemeral. Mm-hmm. Ruby slippers were not meant to be around 100 years later.
No, they certainly were not.
Yeah.
They certainly were not. All right. We got any more entries in the old RFR, This Is Your Life?
I got a couple for you. I got a couple
retro
more for you.
Rewind, whatever we're calling this.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay. So this is going back quite a ways. And I can't believe that this was ever a thing. But I can remember when every week, correct me if I'm wrong, every week we'd hear one of these.
I don't know what all this trouble is about, but I'm sure it must be your fault. Yes, my master.
All right, long-time listeners of the Forcecast know that was the intro that we always played for the Forcecast birthday segment. And it was a
oldie
few years
but a
ago,
goodie.
An oldie but a goodie, certainly. And we said that we weren't going to do that anymore because I think half the show was taken up by birthdays.
I was impressed at the commitment to that for how long, I mean, and the depth to which like every person who was like, oh, the key grip best boy from episode one, happy birthday to you. Like I was really like, wow, these guys are digging in. And then, you know, as all things, as George Harrison said, all things must pass. You know, eventually the segment had to go to the big tape warehouse in the sky, but that was always a fun one, and always one that was like, wow, I can't believe this is the thing. This is like the amount of research that must have gone into that was just incredible.
And then we would do listener birthdays too.
That's right. Yes.
So people would send in these requests, and we would, one would fall through the cracks, and they'd write us back complaining to us. About how they had the whole family gathered to hear it, and we let them down. So it was tough to maintain that. And just after a while, so we would always do the show. We would sign on and then do the birthday shout-outs, and we'd do the Billy D quote of the week.
Of course.
And
of course.
After a while, it just seemed like we couldn't really do the birthday things because it was going too long, and there was just so much breaking Star Wars news happening that we didn't, you know, it just didn't seem right to be dedicating so much time to what was basically a kind of self-serving segment.
Sure.
If it's not your birthday, who cares? You know, but and then the Billy D quote of the week, we got to a point where we sort of ran out of Billy D quotes.
Sure.
And people would suggest movies. Well, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. And it's like, well, he didn't say anything very quotable in those
movies. Oh,
well,
yeah. Then, yeah.
The most frustrating one of all time, and we got countless numbers of requests. Why haven't you featured Billy D. Williams in the movie The Ladies' Man? Remember that Saturday Night Live spinoff thing? Tim Meadows. And it's because they didn't give Billy D. a single decent line of dialogue in that whole film. So the quote,
you can only work with what you got.
It can't just be a Billy D. Williams quote. The quote has to have substance to it. The quote has to be able to stand on its own.
Yes.
And the quote has to be able to elicit a response, most notably one of laughter from Jason Swank. And if the quote doesn't have those qualities, it would not qualify as a quote of the week.
But it's not just the any old Billy quote, Billy D quote. It's the Billy D quote of the week. It's got to it's got to matter.
So we started doing those after Billy D was appearing on this nighttime spinoff of General Hospital, nighttime soap called Night Shift, like General Hospital Night Shift or something. And there was a lot of quotable Billy D in that show. It was great. And then when the show was over, we had this unquenchable thirst for more Billy D quotes. So the quote of the week was born. And I remember his cameo on an early episode of the show Lost was one of those early quotes. There were just so many of them. And it went on for years and years and years. And then we just got to a place where We had drained all of the quotes that we can ever get from Billy D. Williams. But one big victory I had was in 2008, and Billy D. Williams came up to the radio station I was working at.
Oh, yes.
And I was able to grab him, pull him into a production room, and have him record an intro to the Billy D. Quote of the Week segment. Yeah. So that, to me, legitimized the whole thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's like we've been doing this segment for a couple of years. Now we have Billy D. Williams himself introducing the segment. This bit has got to go on for as long as it possibly can go on.
and you know, it's funny you mention that, and it's funny you mention General Hospital Night Shift.
This is Billy D. Williams, Lando Calrissian. It's time for the quote of the week.
Hello, what have we here?
It's just me, Billy D.
And don't mess this up, man. Be smooth.
Lando's right.
Billy D.
Sorry, baby, it's just this.
Why, you slimy, double-crossing, no-good swindler.
Works every time.
And Lando Calrissian is forever.
This is my career. I've worked too long and too hard to risk it all on some silly romance drama.
And I'm too old to waste my time on someone who's going to lie about me or call me silly.
The best. Best one.
What a delivery. I mean, my God.
Oh, that one. Silly. That has, and again, lives rent-free in my head. I think about that one so much.
There were some good ones. From Night Shift. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And that Billy D intro. So we had several of them, you know, over the years.
Yeah, yeah.
And that one I incorporated Queens, Another One Bites the Dust for some what reason, I don't know. It was just like, maybe it was just there.
The vibe was right, you know.
The vibe was right. I don't know what influenced that move, but yeah, that's a good one. I haven't heard that in a long time.
That one, that's a classic. And I have to say, you know, the Billy D quote of the week is the reason that I was able to have a conversation with Billy D. I have my autograph
here
watching the video. I got to meet him at Big Apple Con in New York City back in around 2010, something like that. And, you know, you're lined up. You know how these things are. You're lined up to get your autograph, and you've got, you know, 20 seconds or whatever while they're signing the thing for you. Right. And if you're lucky, you know, if you say something that makes an impression, they'll keep chatting with you for another minute or two or however long before they got to move you along. Right. So you have to make an impression, and you can't just say, Mr. Williams, I loved you in Star Wars. Cause like he hears that every single person in line has said that.
Yeah.
But if you're a Forcecast and Rebel Force radio listener, and you get to the front and you say that you really enjoy his jazz album, Let's Misbehave.
Yeah.
He stops dead in his tracks there and goes, you've heard that?
Yeah.
And now you've got an in and you can talk to Billy D for a couple minutes.
Right.
Before his handler is like, we got to move this along. And that's how it's like. You always want to find like the thing that no one else is talking to them about, right? Yeah. Like what obscure thing did they do that maybe they've forgotten about or that maybe even better, something that was like a passion project of theirs that no one saw or whatever. Like that's always the thing to do. If you want to, that's my tip for like, if you want to have a better conversation than just, I loved you as Lando. That's the secret. And it was because you guys were using the clips from that album, that I was able to truthfully say, I've heard your album and it's great.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, because that reminds me of the time I first met him. And I said to him, hey, you were great in Agent 00 Soul.
There you go.
Yeah. And he said, just like he did with you, he said to me, you saw that?
Yeah.
And when he said that, I said, I have the VHS tape of it. He said, there's a VHS tape of it? He just seemed shocked. And he said it was just a project he had done as a favor to his friend, his son, I'm sorry. A project he did as a favor to his son because his son was doing the music for the movie. And I guess it was his son's friend who was making it. And so Billy D ended up in it. And yes, there is a VHS tape of it.
Yeah. and it's in Jimmy Mac's possession. Yeah. That's the way, man. That is the in, if you want to have those, you know, not in-depth conversations when you're in those lines, but
now how long ago was that when you mentioned that to him?
I think 2010, somewhere thereabouts, a while ago. So I'm like 20 or 21 and he's like, you've heard this album I made in the 60s? And I'm like, yeah, actually I have. Yes.
What a shocker. I mean, because now it's like everything is online now.
Sure. This is before Spotify, you know, and that right. stuff. So, yeah.
I met John Paul Jones of Led Zeppelin once.
Oh, legend.
Yeah, I got to have Lowenbrows with him backstage after his show, and he was being very nice, and I was talking to him, and I brought up this soundtrack he did back in 1986 for a film called Scream for Help.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of I don't know how he landed on this soundtrack. But he seemed so shocked and surprised that I was aware of the recording and I had heard the recording and that I owned the recording. I don't think those sort of things have quite the impact nowadays with everything being online. But
it's true.
Yeah,
it's true. But it's still nothing beats that feeling when you kind of. You catch their attention. Like they're not just going to give you the rote answers that they give everybody of, you know, like, you know, what was it like to make Stairway to Heaven? Like to get into something that like he doesn't get to talk about very often. And he gets to sort of like, ooh, let me stop and think about that. Like you're not just going to get the sort of rehearsed answer.
Right. Right.
And it's, you know, it shows that you are really a fan. And I know that Zeppelin is your band. Like they're, you know, like the Beatles are mine. I mean, I've got the John Lennon's Benefit for Mr. Kite poster here.
Nice.
The poster that inspired the lyrics to the song Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite.
Yeah, there's a deep cut for you.
That's a deep cut, right? So I like that's the kind of stuff that you like to spring on them, and they're like, oh my gosh, I haven't thought about this or haven't, you know, since I did it or whatever.
Yeah.
I've always thought if I got to meet Paul McCartney, what would that thing be that I would pull out? Cause there's so little that he's done that isn't extremely popular or extremely
right,
famous. You know?
Right, right. You just end up being Chris Farley. You know?
Yeah. Oh, that's the. That's
I mean,
the
he nailed
right?
it. He nailed it. That's.
Oh man.
That's yes, the yeah, thing. That's yeah. you know. Hey,
but
you
I don't
remember
want to be
when
that
you
fan.
Did that?
That was awesome.
That was awesome.
You don't want to be that fan. You don't want to be that guy who's just yeah, yeah. So I've always wondered what it would be. I think it would be. He did a movie in 1984 called "Give My Regards to Broad Street."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it didn't do well no. at the box office, and he has memory hold it. He has not re-released it. That you're not going to get. It. He's been remastering all his albums. Guarantee he's not going to remaster that one. Like he just doesn't want that to exist because it's like embarrassing for him that it didn't do well. One of the few things he's ever done that didn't do well. And if I got to talk to him, I'd want to like ask about like what was you know I want to get into to stuff about that film and about the soundtrack because I really like some of the songs off that soundtrack.
But is that the one with No More Lonely Nights?
Yes.
Okay.
And that song is such a banger, like one of his best ballads, and I think it has gotten forgotten because he doesn't want it to be remembered because it's attached to this thing that embarrasses him now. But it's such a great song, and if you're listening, and you don't. It's on Spotify, like the album's on Spotify, the whole thing. No More Lonely Nights is a great ballad, one of his last great, like really, you know, big out there ballads, yeah, I would love to talk to him about that if I ever got the chance.
Yeah, but, I remember when it came out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't ever recall seeing the film though.
I mean, I love Paul, but it's not great. It's not great, but it's, you know, it's a fun watch if you're going in with low expectations. but it's fun. It's fun. He wrote it. He wrote the screenplay, which is, I think is probably why it's not the best. But anyway, like I said, I digress.
All right.
let's do one more and bring this thing home. This is we were at gosh, I don't remember which celebration. Probably Celebration Europe, maybe the first Celebration Europe. Right when Rogue One was about to land, and you know where I'm going with this. And there was this big panel with the entire cast of the main principal cast of Rogue One. Gwendolyn Christie is interviewing them, and Zhan Wen gets a little bit ahead of himself.
Especially that big spoiler moment.
When this guy dead, I do something better. Maybe I believe by my action. He's thinker and doer. So
I think you've got
anyway,
to leave it
there. Anyway.
So she starts bailing him out.
She does. She's absolutely panicked for this guy.
Yes. But when he says, when this guy dead... And he's gesturing toward Donnie. And Donnie's like, oh my God. So he just like puts his forehead in his hand and just is just staring. Just staring at Jang while Jang is explaining how his character reacts to his best friend's death.
Rough.
May I point out that at the end of the panel, before they showed that exclusive trailer for the in-house audience, Kathleen Kennedy was standing in front of a projection that said, "Loose lips sink starships."
It's true.
Yeah, and the second that graphic came up on the stage, everyone started looking at Jing Wang.
What? What? What?
And that became a recurring bit for a while. Like, this guy dead, that guy dead, they're all dead.
They're dead, yeah.
That stuck around for a while.
Yeah, well, you know, that was some of the only English press that Zhang Wen did for Rogue One. And he obviously speaks very broken English.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so his character from Rogue One, oh, God, refresh my memory.
Baze
Malbus,
yeah.
And he was talking about the chemistry and connection his character has to Donnie Yen's character, and he says when he's dead, yeah, what a spoiler. This is
huge.
Months before the film is released, and he lets everyone know Chirrut Imwe is not going to survive the film. But as we all found out, nobody survives the films.
Right.
So it's...
But, yeah. Yeah, that felt like a really, I mean, yeah, like you said, it turned out not to be that big, not that big a spoiler in the end, but felt monumental at the time. It was like, oh my God, like Disney is so buttoned up about these things. How did this happen? How was this able to end? Gwendolyn's in there trying to smooth it over. Like, okay, let's move on. Let's, you got to stop now. Got it. That's it. That's it.
It is funny to look back at Rogue One.
Right.
In a film where like the entire cast gets killed off during the film. That's a rarity.
But, it really is.
You know, Felicity Jones, Jen Erso, dead. Mm-hmm. Cassian Andor, dead. Orson Krennic, dead. Chirrut Imwe, that guy dead. Galen Erso, dead. Alan Tudyk as K2SO, dead. Riz Ahmed, Bodhi Rook, dead. And of course, Baze Malbus, dead. Forrest Whitaker, dead. Saw Gerrera, dead. The only ones who survived were like Jimmy Smits.
Yep, right.
And Genevieve O'Reilly as Mon Mothma. And Darth Vader, Tarkin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Bor Gullet.
Dead.
Dead.
Dead. That guy, dead. The turd with tentacles, dead. But everyone dead. I think he did. That was off screen though. I was thinking about the Mon Cal guy.
Oh,
but as soon as Leia's ship takes off, he's dead. I'm saying dead. Dead, all dead.
Mm-hmm. All dead.
Those guys dead. So nobody survives Rogue One.
No.
Yeah.
No. That's it. There's only one way out. Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately. Well, look, I could keep going all day, but, you know, there was Mon Mothma discovering that the moon is round.
That was a weird time.
That was a weird conversation. Yeah, I thought it was a plate.
Now, again, I was going through, I think I had the laryngitis for that interview as well.
I think
well.
It's the same. I think it was C5.
Is that the one where I lost my voice? Yes, it is.
I think so.
So I just remember being there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a loud convention center. I couldn't hear them, everything. So I was so shocked and surprised when I got home and listened to that tape, when she was talking about the moon not being flat, how she discovered that while she was making Star Wars or something. And it just makes me wonder what she thought the moon was flat. What's the matter with her?
I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, you were definitely alive in 1969. What do you think they were doing?
That's on the flat moon.
Like what? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't get that lady.
But that one is an all-time Hall of Famer. The all the slow and tells over the years. Were it's a great bit. Uncle Moralo's bedtime stories.
Okay, those always, are good.
Mm-hmm. Always classics. Humpy the Ewok.
That was from the Today Show.
Today Show.
They were doing some broadcasts and they had Ewoks there. One of the Ewoks.
Every year, the Today Show crew dresses, they do a themed Halloween costume thing. And they were all doing Star Wars characters and they had Ewok performers there. And one of them tried to hump poor Al Roker's leg.
That's right.
They were badly behaved. Badly behaved Ewoks. Yeah, that's a class. And we had the song that came out. I was looking for that, the Humpy the Ewok song, to the tune of Frosty the Snowman.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
Glenn Nelson.
Was it Glenn?
Yeah.
Okay. I couldn't remember who it was. All right, so I probably could have found it then.
It might have been on a High Adventure album.
High Adventure. Yeah.
But I don't recall.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Weequay Janitor was a recurring guy for
God.
A bit.
Going way
shirtless
back.
Shirtless Palpatine.
Way back.
Yeah. Ben from California, of course. Here's one. This is my white whale. This, I wonder if you still have this in the archive somewhere. There was an outrageous, unthinkable moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think it had to be like, I don't know exactly when, but I'm going to put it pre-2011. So somewhere in the first like 5 years.
Okay.
Someone was dressed up as, I think, Chewbacca, as a Wookiee. and was not allowed to perform. I don't remember why. Maybe he was arrested for something. I don't know. But the thing that stuck in my mind is the way the guy was complaining. Goes, I didn't even get a chance to entertain.
Yeah, yeah, and, yeah. And
the way that guy said that was, you know, 15 plus years later or whatever, still makes me laugh. I have not heard it since. I heard it once, the one time that you guys featured it, and it still rattles around in my brain sometimes. And I was looking for it, couldn't find it in the archive. But that one, that's an all time great for me too.
That is.
I didn't even get a chance to entertain. Yeah, I don't even know if I made the sound.
Yes.
There it is.
Yes. Oh, Jay Mack making dreams come true. That one has been. Thank you for that.
Do you need a cigarette after that?
Yeah, a little bit. I need a Dropbox link is what I need. Last one. This is not even a bit. It's just a thing that happened once, and I was there. I happened to be there for it back when you guys were on like Ustream or Stickam or whatever. One of those old early
talk shoe.
Yeah, whichever one of those it was.
Talk shoe.
It was whichever one. I think it was Stickam, the one where the viewers could also be on camera,
right?
While you guys were talking,
that was a fun one. Yeah, well,
that was a fun one. Mm-hmm. I remember being, and I it was very rare back then that I had a chance to when you guys were doing the show live that I had the chance to join live. But I was able to join live the night that Sheldon Norton ate an old box of C-3POs.
Yes,
on the air. Like yes. To me, that's legendary Forcecast lore. You know, like a core memory, as the kids say nowadays. And I couldn't believe that I got to be there for such a, what to me was a momentous moment. And I've never gotten to meet Sheldon, but if I ever did, I would tell him how much I admired him for eating 40-year-old expired cereal.
Yeah, I still don't understand the entire bit, because it was, when we were done recording the show, I was talking to Swank. And he punched up the whatever the service was we were on. And Sheldon was there. This is like 10 or 20 minutes after we're done with the show. Oh. We've cut it off. But we see Sheldon is still there on camera. And he's just like laying there like out cold in the chair. Oh, and there's like pieces of breakfast cereal on his shirt from that old C-3PO's box he opened and ate. On the show, and he was just laying there, and it's like, oh my God, should we call somebody? This is, but we didn't even know where he was or who he was. And it was a few months after that. I was at an event in Texas, a Star Wars fan. I think it was Fan Days, Star Wars Fan Days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I get approached by this guy, and he's wearing a C-3PO's cereal T-shirt. And I said, oh my God. We had a guy call our show, and he passed out, and he was eating this old C-3PO cereal. And the guy sticks his hand out at me, shake my hand. He goes, oh, nice to meet you. I'm Sheldon Norton.
Yeah.
I'm like, you are Sheldon. I started looking at him. Wow. I was like, are you okay? Did you have to get your stomach pumped?
Right.
We were so nervous.
Man. C-3PO's fan number one there with the shirt and everything. Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Commitment.
That, yeah.
That's commitment.
But there he was.
Yeah, that's it.
Milking it. But I'm telling you, he was out cold. And this was, we were off the air. And we're looking at him going, oh my God, this is not good. So that is a commitment.
Yeah.
It's a commitment to wackiness and breakfast cereal. So,
you know what? If you're not willing to put your stomach on the line for the wars, then I don't want to know you. You know, that's just, we can't be friends.
God, there's probably a brain-eating parasite in that cereal that could have caused serious damage.
Well, you know, thank the maker that Sheldon's okay.
Well, I've had plenty of favorite moments too during the years of doing RFR, but, the thing I do like the best is meeting people, you know, and talking Star Wars with people like you on the Q&A and just being able to pick everyone's minds and kind of build a community of Star Wars fans. It's like the thing I always do with these shows is just try to make sure it's something that if I was looking for something to download, it'd be something I'd like to watch. So I always do it that way.
Yes.
Is this something that's going to make me laugh? Is this something that's going to entertain me? Is this something that's going to, is this the type of conversation I want to listen to? So
that's the key, man. Like yeah. if you're going to be, creating content, if you're going to be creating content, it should be something that you would want. If it's something you would consume, if it's something you would watch, listen to, whatever, there's someone else out there who will find the same, and you can't really fake it.
Yeah.
No one wants to listen to someone fake their fandom for something. Like, it's got to be pure and real and authentic, and you guys obviously have that in spades. So
thank you, man.
I think that is the key to the whole thing, and why you guys have been doing this for so long.
Well, thank you so much, Frank. That's really nice of you to say. And it was nice jogging down memory lane with you. This is your life.
It's a pleasure. This is your life.
Yeah, and you dusted up some real old nuggets there, that's for sure. But, the thing that I always liked when Jason and Pete were hosting the show was just the fact that it goes back to what we were saying. They were talking about the things we like to talk about and speaking using the terminology and talking about the familiar names and all of that stuff. It just was a place where I wanted to be, at least as far as the conversation goes in my earbuds. So I'm glad that after all these years, it still resonates with people.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, if you can argue about whether it's pronounced Forlom or Forlom, like that's my people. That's when you know you've found your tribe.
Yeah. Forlom. That's how I was raised.
Yeah.
Was LOM. And then I stumbled across this whole subsection of fandom that says Forlom. And I just had to have a serious. I looked in the mirror and said, dude, what have we been doing all these years here?
It's a real reckoning. You really got to struggle with your nothing I thought was true.
Yeah,
all upside down.
Everything's been a lie. But that's the great thing about getting the fans together is so, we can talk about it. It's more fun in a group environment, I think.
Amen.
And we all feed off of each other's energy and creativity and opinions and everything. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. So looking forward to Skeleton Crew next month.
Yeah.
So we got our schedule together. And, RFR will be back next week, which is cool. And we are planning on doing a live Patreon show on Thanksgiving week.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah, so it's might be that Tuesday.
Cool.
Also, for those in the Chicago area, planning a Galloping Ghost RFR hangout on Saturday the 23rd of November. So I'll be posting details about that some point in the next few days here on Patreon. And when we get into December, of course, Skeleton Crew will be happening during the holiday season. So during those weeks of Christmas and New Year's, we'll be coming at you on Thursday, both those weeks, Thursday the 26th and Thursday, January 2nd. But there will be no weekly RFR those weeks. But there will be RFR. So no holiday break this year, as we'll be hitting you guys with podcasts twice a week for the first 3 weeks of December. And then for the last 2 weeks of the year, just after shows. So I'm looking forward to it. That's a whole different vibe. When we're doing those live shows and everything. And we're going to do just one live show sort of as a warm-up at the end of November. And just as a way of saying thanks to the Patreon audience. So, Frank, feel free to call in.
I'll put it on my calendar, yeah.
I hope we hear from all you guys. And that'll be it for the weekly show until Skeleton Crew kicks in the next week. And just fingers crossed that one has some sort of quality that resonates with the fan base.
I have a better feeling about this. than I did about The Acolyte. So yeah. I don't know. I'm feeling more optimistic about this one.
Well, with a story about kids, it just indicates to you that it might be coming from a more pure place.
Yeah, yeah.
As far as its approach to Star Wars.
And more of like a back to basics sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe that'll help wash away the taste of The Acolyte from a lot of people. But I mean, I still stand by the fact that I enjoyed The Acolyte.
As did I. I enjoyed lots about it.
But the necessity of telling such a story escapes me a little bit. Yeah. And I think there could have been a great story told from the Sith perspective if it was a little more focused and had a little more substance to it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And unfortunately, The Acolyte lacked in those departments. But Skeleton Crew, fresh start. Skeleton another Crew, fresh start, you know. That's it. Right. That's the great thing about this stuff is that nowadays, once Star Wars comes and goes, it doesn't quite meet your specifications for what makes a good Star Wars show. Just, you know, you can hold your breath because a new one will be coming along soon enough.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's hoping, you know, I'm feeling optimistic. I have a better feeling about this.
And how old are you? You have a 2-year-old.
I've got a 2-year-old. Yep.
And that's it, just the 2-year-old?
Just the 2-year-old.
Okay, so we're still years away from you having those Star Wars bonding moments.
Yes, yes. But we've had a few, you know, she's got her Star Wars bath toys. She loves Yoda and Chewie and Darth, as she calls him. She, you know, and
that's a
she's got her Queen Amidala coloring book that she likes. Ooh. And we've dabbled in some Young Jedi Chronicles, and she's enjoyed some of that. So we're getting, you know, we've got low and slow, have it be in the environment, you know, have her be surrounded by it and she'll see what she gravitates towards.
Yeah, we haven't talked much about the Young Jedi show on RFR because it's so targeted
toward it's not,
toddlers, you know.
It is very much for toddlers. It is. And it's cute. It's cute, but it's nothing. It's nothing to write home about.
Right.
I mean, it's a toddler show and it's cute. It's, you know, positive lessons about friendship and that kind of stuff that you know, positive messages you want a 2-3-year-old to be picking up. But they get some exposure to Jedi and lightsabers, and Yoda shows up every once in a while. And so again, it's in the environment. They're surrounded by it. You can see if they're into it or not.
But we're not going to be having after shows breaking down the motivations of Nubs.
Yeah, no.
What did?
Yeah, not,
what's
not
going on in Nubs' head during this episode? But I'll tell you what, I have watched bits and pieces of the show, and I think it's a quality show.
Yeah.
And all I know is I was sitting with Wendy, and we're flipping around, and it was one of those episodes they were airing on the Disney Channel or whatever. And I clicked on it and she goes, "What's this?" I said, "Oh, this is just, it's nothing. It's like Star Wars for toddlers." And she looked at it for a few minutes. "Oh, it's so cute." And I'm like, yeah, but it's really focused for kids. She turns and looks at me and said, "If our kids were old enough for this show, if they were at the right age for this show, you guys would be eating this stuff up." And I was like, "Yeah, I guess you're right about that." So
I feel like she's not wrong. Yeah.
So Frank, you probably know what she's talking about. So
yes.
All right, man. Well, it's been great to get caught up with you. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for all the prep work you did too, pulling out the old memories from the past. And hopefully, we'll be supplying you with more memories as the future goes on here on RoboForce Radio. So
I look forward to it. Thanks for having me. Yeah, always a blast.
Definitely, Frank. And thank you, everyone, for listening to RFR Q&A. Thank you for your support of Rebel Force Radio here on Patreon. And we'll see you next week with more Q&A and the return of the weekly RFR, too, which will be fun. So we'll get to that Skeleton Crew trailer. There's been a bunch of things piling up that I'm looking forward to getting to. So the weekly show will return next week. But for now, thank you for listening to the Q&A. And on behalf of Rebel Force Radio and RFR VIP Frank, see you next time. And remember,
the Force will be with you always.